Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there. I've got to tell you, a person feels much, much better with freshly roasted coffee in their life. I have got to say, freshly roasted coffee. Hey, welcome to the Pilgrim Show. I'm your host, Nate Moss, the Guru Pilgrim, and we are here for another journey into all things, into philosophy and politics and technology, and we're here to have some fun. So if you would like to be a part of the program, you can go ahead and give me a call at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Once you call in, if you hit the number one, that will tell me that you would like to go live, and we'll have a conversation here on the air. We are live at nateheiserradio.com, and I do want to apologize. Last week, I had some audio issues that I still have not fully resolved. So if you're listening on Freedomizer Radio or on Blog Talk Radio, the audio quality is not going to be great. I will admit that. I'm working on that problem, but I haven't figured out a way to solve it just now. But if you listen to the podcast at the fact, freedompilgrim.com always has better audio quality available there for the show. So if you really like the show and you want to continue to listen, higher quality, that's where you can get that. And at Freedomizer Radio, there are some great developments coming up. There's a new show in the works, so be looking for that. That's an exciting thing. And of course, as always, we're looking at options to make the site better, do a lot of things. So keep your ear tuned for those kinds of things. And it's a great avenue for all things information free. There are some fun stories this week. This has been an interesting week, and a lot has come to light. I would like to talk about Elizabeth Warren as my Democrat candidate of the week. And I've been going through each week just kind of mentioning them. Starting last week, we're going to start looking at the Democrat candidates in a little bit more detail, just kind of get their background. Who are these people? Where they come from? This is something that often in the media you don't hear, like the background and the policies that they really want to implement. I'm going to do that a little bit, see to the pants here, we'll get to that segment for sure. CES was this week, so if you don't know that, that is the Consumer Electronics Show, and they are every year a big draw for a lot of people. I have never been super fascinated by it because new tech, I enjoy new tech and I like to keep my hands on it. I would definitely love to go to see at the CES, but it's never been my biggest thing. My thing is like using it and implementing technology. So it's nice to see, like, I like to get a glimpse of what's out there, but I don't rave over the latest tech. Just give me what's available now, and I like to make things work. So I actually enjoy that more than getting things on the latest tech. Anyway, we'll talk about some of the things that I've seen there. As always, we're going to delve into personal privacy and cell phones and Big Brother and all of those things. We'll talk about that as always. And some all kinds of other great stories on the deck here, quite a bit to get through. So let's get started with a fun story. You're familiar with Y2K, I hope. Y2K was this fear that all of the world was going to end in the 2000s. Reason? Why? Because everything ran on computers in 1999, and as a result, when it came to 2000, the date was going to read 00, and the computer system didn't know how to handle that date, and there was a fear that it would literally shut down the system and make it reboot, and nothing would work. Turns out, there's a small chance that Y2K hit in 2020. This is from Sophos. Like the 3-day story is going to do a really great job at Sophos of putting good articles together. And this is a Sophos article about the Y2K bug and its possible reappearance in the 2020 New Year. Now, it didn't happen on New Year's Day, and that's what's a little confusing. It may not have actually been the real deal. But essentially what happened was Back in Y2K, the fix that was applied was not to rewrite the whole program. See, the problem was the dates were rendered in only, could only store like 100 years in the date system that was used in a lot of computer programs. And in Java's computer programming language, this was the specific one that, that Sophos was looking at. And so the idea was, if you can only store 100 years, let's only store the 100 years that we care about. So let's go ahead and move this problem forward so that we don't have to deal with it for another, let's say, 20 years. And certainly 20 years from now, these computer systems aren't going to be in use at all. The problem is the code base was still in use and is still in use. And in fact, code sometimes lives for a very long time. We think of computer technologies as moving very rapidly, and they do. But usually they're building on top of things that have been around for a long time. A great case of this would be the subsystems of operating systems. If you look at the core utilities of getting around in Linux, for example, the ls command or the mv command, because they had the job that they had to do is very simple, the code will be written for them and essentially just hang out for a very long time, sometimes for decades. That code will just continue to live and almost untouched. And this is the case here with the Y2K bug. Apparently, in New York City, the card payment system for their parking meters went down on January 2nd. And there's suspicion that this was moved by 20 years and the code was still there and it was forgotten about. And that may have been what caused the bug. And of course, it's just the way that you're storing dates. And if that's really all it is, then a fix is not a really, really difficult thing to get around. There are ways to do that, obviously. So that's the situation with that. I thought that was a fun story because I never thought I would hear the Y2K thing come around again. I just thought it was fascinating. There are some developments on impeachment. And this whole thing with Nancy Pelosi holding the articles of impeachment has a lot of people confused. It has all kinds of speculation on both sides. What's going on here? There have been Democrats who have come out and said, hey, you know, this needs to come over to the Senate. What are you doing? I don't understand Nancy holding it. And then what happens is, in each case, they backtrack. Dianne Feinstein was the most recent that I saw who did this and basically said, hey, you know, we really need to get these articles over to the Senate. This makes no sense why we would hold them. Let's just do this. Publicly, she says this. And then short while later, she comes out and says, well, understanding the current situation, I really think that it is wise to wait and hold these articles. This in light of the fact that McConnell has signed a resolution to dismiss the articles within 25 days, or January 25th, I forget. In 25 days from, when was this published? Very shortly, less than a month from now. This was published on the 10th yesterday, so we have 24 days left before McConnell says, hey, you know what, we are going to just dismissed the articles of impeachment. They have not received, the Senate has not received them. So they don't exist anymore. They don't matter anymore. So we'll see what happens. I would not be surprised if the articles never make it to the Senate before the Senate dismisses them and they become null and void. That's possible. Maybe not super likely. But I wouldn't be surprised. We'll see where it goes. I think the more likely thing is that they will make it over there eventually, maybe by the pressure of what McConnell's going to push. And this is the funny thing, right? Mm-hmm. Nancy's holding it because she really believes that she can pressure the Senate to go against Senate rules and actually against constitutional rules and try to have some sort of a trial and bring people before the Senate. And the trial's already happened. And constitutionally, based on the way that the people is laid out, as I understand it, they have to do the trial they have to have all the hearings in the House, and they bring the case to the Senate, and the Senate just decides whether or not it was a valid case. And in this case, since there wasn't enough movement or development in impeachment and the impeachment articles, which if you would ask before that, Ocasio-Cortez and her band of resistors, they would probably agree that this impeachment, these impeachment articles are worthless. They really don't contain much in the way of substance. And so the thinking is, if we hold these articles, we can really pressure the Senate to and McConnell into calling witnesses and making a bigger deal about it, and then maybe we can actually move impeachment forward. This is our best chance, right? The problem is McConnell is pressuring them and really making it stick. And it's not going to be too long before we see the end of this, I do believe. That's the interesting thing about politics. If it is something that attaches to the mainstream and everybody's aware of it, it gets moved pretty quickly. And if it's not something that gets a lot of direct interaction from the public, then it kind of sits quiet for a very, very long time. And we're seeing Trump do a lot of these things in the background where he's handling things and fixing things that have been issues for a very long time, but just have not come to the surface because they haven't gotten the media attention and movement behind it. CES. There were some pretty cool things at CES, and a lot of them were phones and screens and TVs have been a big thing at CES, so that's no surprise. And we've been seeing, I'm going not just from CES, but other things I've seen as well. A lot of what we're seeing is curved screens. The ability to curve a screen is going to go a long way in our interactive technology. And that is already happening. So cell phones are foldable now, and my very favorite is laptops that have a screen. And Lenovo and Dell are both developing those. I don't remember if those were in the list of the coolest things for CES. Let me put it right here. I don't remember. There are 8 slides in this. Oh, good. This is from CES. A whole bunch of different gadgets and so forth. Released yet, and Lenovo has an X1 that they're going to have a foldable screen. Essentially, there's a device that I have that does sort of a similar thing. Basically, what it is I have a yoga book, a Lenovo yoga book. Basically, what that is you have a flat surface instead of a keyboard, and that flat surface can double as either a keyboard with it's a flat surface, but it's etched on the first variant, the one that I have. And so you can use a stylus and you can draw, or you can turn on the etched lights, the regular lights in the etching, that make it look like a keyboard. And they can be turned off and it looks more like a flat surface. So it's really, really cool, and I really like that. The second variant I like even more. The problem is it's Windows only, and so I'm going to have to hold out on these. I would use this like as a work device if it was Windows, and I worked in a Windows sort of environment, but I wouldn't use this as a personal device until they make it Linux available, just personal preference. The first version of the yoga book that Lenovo came out with, they offered an Android or Windows, and they sold more Windows variants, and they sold Android variants. And so Windows won out. And rightly so. I mean, honestly, this is the kind of device you want to live on. You can do literally everything with. You can draw, you can annotate. You want to have access then to everything that you do in a, you know, full desktop sort of world on a device like this. And this is really the direction that we're going. It's really the future, and we're getting closer. So this is why I have always been a fan of low-profile keyboards, early adopter of that, and just really, you know, rather than going mechanical and going thick and clicky, I really always wanted something low-profile because I could see this would be the future. Basically, you're looking at a flat surface, and you're just going to have to get used to typing on a flat surface. It's coming, and it's not going to be like you can't get a keyboard. There will always be keyboards, I think, because of their tactile response and all of that. I don't think that that's going away. I think that's going to evolve. And one of the things that we'll get used to, because the keyboard, if you can double that keyboard as a notepad and as, you know, a tool that integrates with the application you're using, you can switch out controls. Even for gaming, this becomes interesting. So I really think this is the future. We'll just have to get used to it. So that's kind of exciting, actually. I have always wanted that. In fact, since Tron Legacy movie, where the keyboard was in the desk, I thought that was so cool, and that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, this is going to be cool. Most of what CES really was cell phones and other kinds of basic gadgets, a few robots and things. Nothing really extravagant. The other thing is TVs are becoming rollable, and the one that was interesting to me was one that rolls up. So it rolls up into the furniture, and then when the furniture is like smaller than the TV is, because what it does is the TV actually rolls into a roll, and then it unrolls and scrolls itself and comes up. I could understand that from the ceiling. There was a TV that was doing that from the ceiling earlier that I saw before CES, I believe. But that was basically interesting from CES. So, a couple other things to talk about in regard to tech. And I don't know how much of this I'll get in before the break. I usually break it right around 5 o'clock. So we're coming up on this. I might get a good bit of this in here. I call this segment The Good, The Bad, and The Spies, because that's kind of where we're headed. And it seems like every week there are developments in this world. It has been since I started the show. There has always been news around this issue. So I think it almost just deserves its own segment that's just going to maintain its segment. And each week there's going to be more news about it. And I'll just kind of try to cover this and go over kind of what I'm seeing out there. And hopefully we can just be aware, and the more aware that you are and that I am about what's going on with Big Brother and with cell phones and with tracking and all of this, the better we can protect ourselves. And if you decide that you want to try to implement better privacy practices and give the big boys a little bit less of yourself, there are ways to do it. And, you know, for me, it's not even a matter of, like, concealing anything from anybody. And that's why I've never really had a problem putting my stuff out on Google. Like, I don't care. In fact, I actually like to broadcast myself and paint a picture of myself as accurate, because I'd rather people find me and find the real me than find some fictitious me. You know how, you know, sometimes you do searches on people and it's like, well, that's not really true about them, because algorithms can only guess so much. But if you really broadcast yourself in the right way, that's great. You know, people know who you are, and I think that's a good thing. I have nothing to hide. What I do have a problem with is people like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, anybody, thinking of themselves as greater than anything. They're greater than the government. They're greater than your boss. They're greater than your employer. They're greater than your constituents. They're greater than everyone. It's almost as if they are trying to make themselves out to be God in the sense that they want to feel like they know everything about you. And maybe this is conspiracy, you know, whatever, except that every single week there are more and more stories about this kind of thing. Let's go through a couple of these. Now, this one from Sophos again, this is Apple, and this is just an example of what I'm talking about. Apple is scanning iCloud photos for child abuse images. Now, that's actually not a bad thing to do. And essentially, if you have photos on the iCloud, they are being scanned by AI. Apple has access to those photos. What are they doing with those photos? Here's the thing. This is, in a sense, not a concern to me. It's actually an encouraging thing, and at the same time, it scares me. Here's why. I mean, you're dealing with child abuse images, so obviously this is something that, if we can catch them, good for Apple, right? And if we can find people who own this kind of data, good for Apple, right? But the flip side is, Apple has deemed this activity to be immoral. Now, you would say, well, yeah, obviously. But who is the moral judge deciding what is moral and immoral for Apple iCloud? And if they decide that a certain kind of thinking is immoral, right? They decide that Apple someday decides that my religion is not moral. If Apple decides that my preference in coffee is immoral. In my preference in which car I drive is immoral. My preference in doctor, my preference in healthcare, my preference in vaccination. If these things become immoral, then some of these things, if you think about them, very quickly could become immoral. Then where do you draw the line? Who is the judge? That's what I want to know. And in this case, it's accepted by nearly everyone in society that this activity is wrong. And so, good on Apple. Except that it's scary as all get out that Apple is deciding to make this kind of call. And it really leaks of danger and potential tyranny. Because if Apple gives in to the government, it's more and more that they're trying to appease government, because the U.S. government is really putting pressure on the companies, and they're really putting pressure on them. And they are starting to crack. And I've been watching this because I'm really concerned. There's another case, and I don't even know if I have this story. I don't see it on my stack. Do I have this story? No, I don't think I have this story. There was another instance of the FBI asking. Yeah, that's what I can look for here. Let's see. Here it is. Here it is. This is another show this story. My goodness, so this is just on a roll here. Where I don't know. I tend to like their headlines, and they make good articles. So anyway, here's from Sophos. The FBI asks Apple to help it unlock iPhones of a naval-based shooter. So this was a shooting that happened in Florida a while back, and the FBI has asked Apple to unlock two iPhones that belong to the murderer. So great, you know, okay. Late on Monday, FBI General Counsel Dana Buenti, I'm probably saying that wrong, sent a letter to Apple's general counsel, and it wasn't made public, but it was, the article says, but the FBI shared it with NBC. That wouldn't be a leak, would it? It doesn't sound like a leak to me. So NBC reports the letter and exposes it, and here it was basically the FBI got a subpoena allowing the FBI to search the content of the iPhones. However, both the iPhones are password protected, and so far they haven't had any luck guessing the passwords. So they tried every trick in the book that they have available, and if you remember the last time this happened, the FBI had other methods to get into the iPhone that they didn't try before they asked Apple. They just blatantly wanted Apple to build in backdoors. That's all it was. And Apple refused to build backdoors or to update the phone in any way to, you know, make it a backdoor, whatever you want to say. And this is why I'm watching this closely, because this battle has been going on now for a little while, and I'm considering switching to iPhone from Android because of this kind of issue. But and I'm watching it now, and I'm going, this isn't great, right? Apple sent a statement to NBC saying that it's helping the government. They say in the statement, quote, "We have the greatest respect for law enforcement and always have worked cooperatively to help their investigations. When the FBI requested information from us relating to this case a month ago, we gave them all the data in our possession, and we will continue to support them with the data we have available." And it's very specific from them and explicit. They're going to share the information that they have available. What this means is they're not going to share the information that they don't have. There is the password unlocks this thing, so the only way to get in. And there is no way to break it. It's just the reality of this situation. So this is going to be a battle that's not going to just end really quickly. It's something that's going to be ongoing, and Apple's not the only one that Facebook is facing the same thing on this, where they want to encrypt everything on the platform, and it's really not making that easy for them. It just so happens that I am already out of time, so we're going to go to a break, and we'll come back very, very shortly.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
I'd like to tell you about the open source tool that I use the most. It's not LibreOffice, and it's not some fancy IDE. It's actually Inkscape. That's right, the vector graphics editor. I use this tool for everything, from custom graphics to presentation slides. Occasionally, I'll even use it in place of publishing software. Why do I make so much use of Inkscape, you ask? Unlike some open source tools, the feature set that Inkscape touts is almost directly comparable to its expensive closed source alternatives. Like any software, it can take some getting used to, but with all the tools in easy-to-find places, it may be the fastest way to get started with vector graphics. Vector graphics are a kind of graphics that use points on a graph to draw lines and shapes, which makes them infinitely scalable without distortion. With a variety of grid, snapping, and alignment tools, Inkscape gives you precise control over every part of your art and opens the door to all kinds of possibilities. Install it for free. Visit Inkscape.org to learn more.
Of all the grounding studies, the one that really got our attention is called Electric Grounding Improves Vagal Tone in Preterm Infants. In the study, 26 premature babies in an NICU were connected to grounding wires. The heart rates of the grounded infants stabilized, and their vagal tone, a critical measure of infant health, increased by 67% with grounding.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So, Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
All right, we're back. We got 1.5 hour down, 2 more half hours left in the Pilgrim Show. And again, welcome back to the show. My name is Nate Moss. I am the Guru Pilgrim. As always, the phone number, if you would like to call, is 319-527-6208. Press number 1 after you're dialed in, and I will talk to you live on the show here. Each week, I've been looking at one of the candidates from the Democrat side, and the one that I've chosen today is Elizabeth Warren. So I don't have a whole lot of plans to talk about here, other than looking at two sources. There are two sources, really, that give you everything you need. Their Wikipedia page, as long as it's not being manipulated when you look at it, which is, you know, a big possibility, because these kinds of pages are prone to sabotage, and their political campaign website. I gotta tell you, when I landed on the ElizabethWarren.com website, it greeted me with a number of pop-ups, which I had to close to get to the content, and then upon navigating the website, I was greeted with more pop-ups that I had to close, and this is in a browser where I have a pop-up blocker. So these are like built into the site, integral to the site pop-ups that you have to close in order to get to the content. So that's welcoming and reassuring. On her Wikipedia page, it says that Elizabeth Ann Warren is an American political former academic serving as a senior United States Senator from Massachusetts since 2013. She was formerly a law school professor specializing in bankruptcy law, a member of the Democrat Party, and a progressive. Warren has focused on consumer protection, economic opportunity, and the social safety net while in the Senate. Warren is a graduate of the University of Houston and Rutgers Law School and has taught at several universities, including the University of Houston, University of Texas at Austin, and the University of Pennsylvania, and Harvard University. She's also taught at Harvard. She was one of the most influential professors in the field of commercial law before beginning her political career. She has authored 5 and co-authored 6 books. Warren's first foray into public policy began in 1995 when she worked to oppose what eventually became a 2005 act restricting bankruptcy access for individuals. Her national profile grew in the late 2000s following her forceful public stances in favor of more stringent banking regulations. After the 2007-2008 financial crisis, she served as chair of the Congressional Oversight Panel of the Troubled Asset Relief Program and was instrumental in creating the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, of which she served as the first special advisor under President Obama. In November 2012, Warren won the U.S. Senate election in Massachusetts, defeating incumbent Republican Scott Brown and becoming the first female senator from Massachusetts. She was assigned to the Senate Special Committee on Aging, the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee, and the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Warren won re-election by a wide margin in 2018, defeating Republican nominee Geoff Diehl. On February 9, 2019, at a rally in Lawrence, Massachusetts, Warren announced her candidacy for the 2020 United States presidential election. If you remember, the biggest thing that most Republicans remember Elizabeth Warren for is her claim that she was a Native American. And she has used this claim of being a Native American to leverage her and position herself in the world. And there are cases of her using this for personal gain. Later, upon being challenged with this claim, she had a DNA test done. And those DNA tests proved that she is, in fact, not a Native American, even a little bit. So, this is what we know about her. She was, I really think it was actually a farce. I think she actually believed that she was Native American, ironically. But she definitely was not. So we know that much. But that is because she made a big deal about it, and then she went around and apologized to everybody and had a listening tour and all of this. That really became quite the thing. So most Republicans are going to remember her for that. That's what they're going to remember her for, not for the other things that she did. On her website, she has a plans section, and she's got a long list of things she wants to do. I want to see if I can grab a couple of these and just highlight them. The very, very, very first one, it looks like they're trying to be alphabetical. Yeah, these are all in alphabetical order, which is strange. She doesn't want to highlight. That's really strange. Why would you? She put all of her policies in alphabetical order instead of order of importance. So she doesn't care? Like, these are things I'm going to do? But they don't have to fall in any order? Okay. Very first one, 100% clean energy for America. That can't go wrong. The science is clear. The world's leading experts have long known that climate change is caused by human beings. It is here, and it is accelerating. Because that's not disputed at all. We already see its effects. Record floods, devastating wildfires, 100-year storms that happen every year. Actually, that's literally what she said. 100-year storms that happen every year. Yeah, they do happen every year. Costing lives, causing hundreds of billions of dollars of damage, and disproportionately impact. Have people lived in Florida for a while? Have people in Florida been hit with hurricanes before my lifetime? Before your lifetime? Have hurricanes been hitting the coasts of Florida and destroying homes for as long as the English settlers have been there? Have we gotten better, actually, at preparing for hurricanes? Is it possible that there are fewer deaths in these so-called 100-year storms? It's all just perspective. And I don't have to preach to the choir. I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this show, you're either on Freedom or the Radio listening because you care about freedom, and then you probably have a certain perspective about our country and what it's here for. And if you're listening on GoogleProgram.com, it's because you know me. So, yeah, I have a feeling not a big deal. All right. Let's see, what else we got? A fair and welcoming immigration system. Welcoming, I think we know where that's going to go. A working agenda for Black America. See, why does she have to be so racist about this stuff? Like, these aren't Black Americans, these are minorities. What is she doing? For too long, Black communities have been locked out of opportunity. Why do you guys separate people like this? The path to economic security is steep and rocky for millions of working people in this country, and steeper and rockier for Black America. Because you keep making it steeper and rockier. The more you tout it, the more you push them into deal with are in a corner and the more they're going to sit. But this is not how you bring them out of it. In fact, who, under whose leadership have we had the lowest unemployment under African Americans in history? The lowest. That would be 08. That would be a conservative. All right. So you're going to have to compete with that. And this is something that's going to be a great way to do it. Let's see, what else is congressional action to protect choice, which all that with our last candidate, probably going to see that in the weekend. Affordable higher education for all. And again, they count higher education as being absolutely vital. Everyone has to go to college. Why does everyone have to go to college? The world has changed. The internet is making it easier to learn trades and get into things much cheaper. It's easier to find people, connect with people. And higher education isn't for everybody. If you're going into construction and you can get yourself a job out of high school learning construction and working in construction, you don't need to go get a degree to work in construction. And you can make good money in construction. It's a real thing. If there was nobody working in construction, if there were no coal miners, because all the coal miners decided to go learn how to program, as provided, we wouldn't have these problems. All right. Affordable high education for all. Let's see, what else do we have? And private prisons. We saw that policy before somewhere else. This is interesting. Excessive lobbying tax. This might actually be a good thing. Corporate interests spend more on lobbying than we spend to fund both houses of Congress. Okay. It strengthens congressional independence from lobbyists. And give Congress the resources it needs to defend against these influence campaigns. So influence campaigns, so they're going to make like some rules around that. I actually think that would be a good thing to do. Lobbying seems un-American. I don't want to, I got to be careful what I say about that because I don't understand that world fully. So I've got to be careful about that. I don't want to spend the whole time talking about this. We could just go down through, but that's not beneficial for you. I don't think you want to listen to all of that. But sort of related to this, Facebook is responding to this pressure to say, hey, let's block all political ads. And Facebook said that while it will not block political ads, new controls have been introduced to allow people to see fewer political ads on their Facebook and Instagram feeds. Facebook's response to this whole campaign, the 2020 presidential campaign, is really mixed bag and one-sided. They get attacked from both sides. I mean, Facebook's really in a bad place. There is nobody who likes Facebook right now except the users of Facebook. There really isn't. And this is a story here from ZDNet. And I'm just going to read part of it because it's good stuff here. They are quoting a product management director by the name of Rob Leatherin in a blog post that he wrote. Here's what he has to say about Facebook. In the absence of regulation, Facebook and other companies are left to design their own policies. We have based ours on the principle that people should be able to hear from those who wish to lead them, warts and all. And that what they say should be scrutinized and debated in public. And again, we're dealing with a company that is not sure if it's a platform or a public forum or a, what's the alternative? It's a publishing house, a media organization. They can't be both. And they're trying to be both, and that's not how that works. And there are lawsuits against them right now for that very issue. So essentially, what they want to do is they want to be able to say, well, we need to allow people to come to our public square, that is Facebook, and warts and all present themselves, except he continues saying that while political ads will be allowed, politicians will not be allowed to, quote, say whatever they like, end quote. Southern says all users must abide by our community standards. That is, you are now not a public forum anymore. You're a publishing house. You get to decide what your authors do and do not say. So you're no longer a public forum. So pick one, because you can't have the constitutional rights of both. That's not healthy, and that's actually scary. They say these community standards apply to ads and include policies that, for example, ban hate speech. Oh my. They ban hate speech, harmful content, and content designed to intimidate voters or stop them from exercising their right to vote. We regularly disallow ads from politicians that break our rules. So we are going to allow any politician, warts and all, to present themselves on Facebook, only if what they have to say agrees with our rules. Isn't that funny? That is priceless. And that goes right to the heart of this whole issue of the good, the bad, and the spies. Because we have big brothers and multiple of them. It's not like there's one big brother looking over you. It's a whole bunch of them. That's why it's a brother, not a father. Big father would be one. Big brother, you could have as many big brothers as you want. You could have big brother Facebook. You could have big brother government. You could have big brother whatever you want. And the danger here is that there are more big brothers than we realize. There are big brothers that don't even realize they're big brothers. There's a story here from ThreatPost that I'll share in the show notes at GuruPilgrim.com and at FreedomMentorRadio.com. From ThreatPost. ThreatPost is an incredible source of information. They're always on top of stuff here. Ring is a company that makes doorbells, and their digital doorbells, they have a camera inside of them. Okay, so, but Ring makes other products in there as well. There were four employees of Ring that were fired for essentially spying on their customers, for connecting to video feeds without users' consent, without users knowing. They have the power to just jump in there. Now, of course, it's a good thing. Okay, there were people caught. They were fired, and they're no longer there. And that should dissuade other current employees of Ring from doing the same thing. However, architecturally, it's a perfect indicator of what IoT devices are doing. When you bring an IoT device that somebody else built into your house, you don't know what they're able to do with it. And chances are they're able to just jump in and look at whatever, and that includes smart TVs now, because a lot of smart TVs have cameras and microphones in them. That includes gaming devices, that includes laptops. Not as much cell phones, but to a point cell phones, the lower end cell phones. I've got a number of stories here. Google's in big trouble because there have been pieces of malware. You know how when you buy a phone, there's a bunch of software on that phone that you can't uninstall. You ever notice that? Like, you go to clean up your phone and you're like, hey, you know, this, what is this app? This is like some cheesy, you know, walking measurement app or something. They're like, that has no purpose. Oh, I can't uninstall it. Why can't I uninstall this? You know, it's built onto the phone and baked in almost. Well, when a manufacturer of the phone develops the operating system, they can build it in such a way. They're basically taking Android and they're spinning their own twist of Android. And so they can do what they want with it. They can build things in that you can't remove. You can build in apps that you can't remove. But the manufacturer considers it the integral of the phone. And that's a necessary evil, because if you're going to build a phone and you're going to have a type of sensor on it that nobody else has, you have to be able to build in ways of interacting with that sensor maybe. So it's a necessary thing in the Android architecture. It's not a problem with the Android architecture. It's a problem with this is not really a problem. It's capitalism at work, isn't it? It's an interesting cat caveat to capitalism. It's almost libertarian in the sense that anybody can do anything they want, and anybody can become a big brother if they want to be. If you're a smartphone manufacturer, you can be a big brother. And Google is getting hit with this one because and there are 50-plus organizations that have reached out to Google and said, look, you need to do something about this. Essentially, the lower-end smartphones that are releasing Android, they have had Chinese malware bundled with them. So the Chinese government has been able to spy, now I don't know the extent of this, and there's a number of stories here, but it'd be easy to find this information because it's a big story. But the Chinese government has been able to use this malware and whatever capabilities that it has to essentially spy on American citizens. And not any American citizens, the citizens of America who can't afford the better phones. It's the cheaper phones that have this malware on them. And there's other bloatware that comes on these cheaper phones that you can't remove. It's the more expensive phones. You spend money on a phone, and generally there's more care given to privacy and user experience and all of that. So it's basically taking advantage of poor people, and that's a big deal. So all of this to say, you know, each of these big brothers that we might have is something, a piece of ourselves that we're giving away. And we don't even, I think most people don't even realize that we're doing it. Most people aren't looking at the security world. They're not following security news, so they don't know what's going on. There is a story I have here, kind of somewhat related. And this one is from The Register. And we'll definitely link this one in the show notes here. And the title is, why is a 22-gigabyte database containing 56 million U.S. folks' personal details sitting up on the open internet using a Chinese IP address? Seriously, why? That's the headline. That was the whole headline. If Czech people could take a look at this, that would be great. This is really fascinating, so I'm going to read it. Exclusive, a database containing the personal details of 56.25 million U.S. residents, that's a lot, from names and home addresses to phone numbers and ages, has been found on the public internet, served from a computer with a Chinese IP address. Bizarrely enough, actually, you know what? This doesn't have everything. It's just you got what? You get the name, the home address, the phone number, the age, things that you might put into like a website when you sign up for something. Huh. I wonder how many of these 56.25 million U.S. residents gave up their personal details voluntarily. It's just a guess. Just hypothetically. Anyway, continuing. The information silo appears to have been obtained somehow from Florida-based CzechPeople.com. Ha! I knew it. Didn't I say so? There is a typical people finder website. And this is what CzechPeople.com is. It's a people finder website. For a fee, you can enter someone's name, and it will look up their current and past addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, names of relatives, and even criminal records in some cases, all presumably gathered from public records. However, all of this information is not only sitting on one place for spammers, miscreants, and other netizens. That's clever. I like that term, netizens. I'm a netizen. Are you a netizen? It's quite a pretty clever term. Anyway. To download in bulk. It's being served from an IP address associated with Alibaba's web hosting wing in Hangzhou, East China, for reasons unknown. It's a perfect illustration that it's not only this sort of personal information in circulation, it's also in the hands of foreign adversaries. This is how hacking works. I mean, if you think about, if you've seen any of the demos of hacking, like people have made little videos to demonstrate how dangerous hacking is. I can't remember any specific examples because the problem is I've seen this a couple of times. But essentially, somebody will go up to a hacker and they'll be like, "Hey, so I want to make a YouTube video because I want to make money," which I could also talk about that a little bit. But I think I'm running out of time. There's more to get through here. And they say, hey, hack me because I want to see where I'm vulnerable. And the guy comes back like 2 days later and says, hey, I own you. I have your bank accounts. I have your social security information. I have your credit. I have everything. I own you. And he has like, oh my, this is risky. But it's how it works. Like, you know the person's name, you know their address, you know their age, you know their family members' names, you know the dog's name. You get their social media. You figure out all of those things, and then you say, I could be this person. And then you like log into their Facebook account, and then you're like, oh, well, this is their other phone number, and this is the password they used for this. I bet they used it for their email. Ah, hey, look, I'm in their email. I wonder if I can log into their bank account. Yep, see? Pretty easy. That's how it works. You take a bit of information and you add to it. So the fact that you're putting your information out there just for one big brother means that it is out there for another big brother to grab. And they take it and they say, you know what? I've got this information. I've got their home address. I've got their name. I've got the dog's name. I bet you I could find their username. Ah, there you go. There's their username. Now I have their email address, and I'm going to guess that I could reset this password here. And next thing you know, you are pwned, as they say. Pwned? Here's a P. I haven't figured out what that means yet. Somebody fill me in, please. Anyways, we're out of time for this segment, so I've got to roll the tape, which you are only going to hear on GuruPilgrim.com, because, again, my audio issues still remain. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative radio show here on FreedomizerRadio.com, Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to WeFunder.com/GroundswellCard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with Tower Gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So, Misty'sGardens.com. Have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
An image editor that is capable of advanced manipulation with layers and masks, but can't afford a CS subscription? You should check out GIMP, the GNU Image Manipulation Program. GIMP is an open source image editor with loads of powerful features. It is available for Linux, macOS, Windows, and other operating systems. I certainly use it. I probably find myself opening GIMP on average about once a day. I find that for most of the day-to-day tasks that I do on images, whether that be photo retouching or graphic creation, GIMP is more than capable of getting the job done. Although the workflow is a bit more destructive than Photoshop, the way it handles layers and masks is super easy and intuitive. It also has powerful tools for controlling selection, including path tools and smart selection tools. At the cost of free, why not give it a try? Visit www.gimp.org today.
Okay, one more time. This is your foot. This is shoes. This is your foot in shoes.
I can't move.
Any questions?
This public service announcement brought to you by Zero Shoes. Feel the freedom, feel the fun, feel the world in Zero Shoes.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
And if you are listening live, you do not hear that awesome music. We are back. Phone number to call, 300-319-527-6208. Press number one to go live if you would like to talk to me. We are back at the Pilgrim Show. My name is Nate Moss, the Guru Pilgrim. We're going to finish out this show. We got one more half-hour segment here to go. And I'd like to talk about a theory that I have, and that is about the U.S. sovereignty of the states. And the United States was founded with this idea that the central government of its state, of this country, would be have a little bit of power. And that would be how this government, this country would interact with other countries, is through the sovereignty of that one nation. And then essentially what would happen is each state would be sovereign as a state. And that state would make laws and control regulation and all of that for its own people, because the thinking is, if you are a governor of a state, you have a much better understanding of the needs of your people than you do of the needs of someone in another state. And I think that that model really works. But of course, this has changed over time, and the federal government has presumed a lot of control, and much of what we have today in this country is controlled and run and maintained by the central government of United States. What I'm seeing, though, is this pattern that I'm really fascinated by, and that is that as time goes on, and this under President Trump, and you'll have to excuse the background noise if my family's in the room here, so that's all right, but we'll just have to deal with that. Yes, that's it. So anyways, we have, what I'm seeing is under President Trump, we have more difference between liberal and conservative states. We have a much more liberal California and a much more liberal New York than we did before Trump. And I think it's because it's a reaction to Trump. I think they're moving faster in the states to set laws and to set regulation. If you look, some of the things that have gone into effect now in California are just incredible. And that'd be the case for New York as well. The New York has been pushing stuff and passing regulation. Breitbart has an article here on parents protesting LGBT rights curriculum, and this would be New Jersey. So in New Jersey, there are laws that enforce that require curriculum to be taught, basically teaching on the LGBT and disability inclusive like history and really, you know, what they say, quote, about the rich contributions and accomplishments of our LGBTQ community and those with disabilities. I mean, I kind of think it's ironic that they're putting LGBTQ people in with those with disabilities, because one of the, some of those are really psychological issues that they have, and that's why they're in the situation that they're in. So I think it's weird that they put them with disabilities, though, because I you know, if I were an LGBT person, I would be like, you're putting me in with a disability, and that's kind of like, these are the kinds of disparities that you get when you start to emphasize minority points of view. And really almost pitting these people against each other, because we don't really hear about feminists anymore. We hear about the LGBT community, but we don't hear about feminists. And I think part of the reason is you can't have both. And so that's one of those issues. You're gonna pit people against each other. But so this is what I'm seeing. So I'm seeing more and more the liberal states moving more and more liberal. But Donald Trump issued an executive order that essentially gives each state the option of whether or not they want to participate in the refugee program. The United States has a refugee program. What that means is when someone enters our country as a refugee, as a legitimate refugee, that refugee can be placed. And the government has a process by which it takes people and places them into cities around the country. And so that's exactly what they're doing. And this executive order takes these takes each state and says, hey, you have the option to opt into this program, or if you want to opt out. And pretty much everybody has opt in. They say, yeah, we want to, as a state, we will take refugees, except for Texas. And Texas has decided not to accept refugees. That's a big move. That means that if somebody comes across the border from Mexico into Texas, they will not be settled in Texas. They will move somewhere else. They will not be settled in Texas, regardless of if they're a legitimate refugee or not. And I think this is a move to put pressure, because if you go to Texas and Texas can't take you, but the government decides to relocate you to California, that's going to anger California, because and that was the initial reaction when it was proposed, and Trump sort of mentioned like offhand, like, hey, what if we just took all of the illegal aliens and moved them to the sanctuary cities, and there was, the left was up in arms about that, and it was like, well, there you go, there's the perspective that just exposed themselves. So with this, I think we're almost getting back to something, and this may be a strategy. And I don't know how much in this is masterminded, but I think that it's an effective way of getting our country back to where it needs to be. And maybe it's by its very structure, it might be trying to reset itself. There have been a lot of parallels that I have seen, and obviously I wasn't around at the founding of our country. But when I see the way that people are working in government on the right at this point in time, some of it sort of, to me, seems almost reminiscent of an era gone by that I've heard things about. It seems to me almost like we're trying to found ourselves again. Like maybe we could just get ourselves back to those principles that founded us as a nation. And every great power is going to go through this. Rome went through this. There was a republic, and Rome that Roman Republic collapsed and became an empire. And then that empire eventually collapsed. In this case, the left doesn't want us to become an empire. The left wants to destroy us. So there's a lot at stake here for a lot of people. And I think that our country is really in danger. And what we're seeing is people really trying to set down, this is how we were founded, and we want to be more like that. And Trump is really maybe moving us in that direction. Let's go ahead and polarize the states. Because what that does is it allows those states to become exposed for what they are. And then the more that that happens, the more obvious it will become. If New York and California just completely implode, then it will become obvious that the Democrats were not able to save them. And what it will do is it will expose the policies as failures. And perhaps people will consider other policies. That's the thing to think about. I did want to mention this, and I don't have this anywhere in my show notes, so before I forget about it, I did want to mention about YouTube. This is a hunch that I have, is that YouTube is going to be, it had its heyday when people would become millionaires on YouTube, and there were a good number of them, and it was possible to make some real serious money on YouTube. They are now treating, YouTube is now treating the videos that are targeted for children, any video, regardless of the data that comes in about that video, if it is targeted for children, so if it's basically if it's for games, or if it's in any way perceived as being targeted for children, it is treated as something that needs to be COPPA compliant. As a result, the kind of ads that they can target to those videos becomes extremely limited, which means that the advertising revenue for those videos is going to drop significantly. And this is going to be the case. YouTube, I think, is less and less profitable for creators. Over time, it becomes less and less so. And that's going to continue to be the case because it's getting easier and easier for anybody to make videos. So the amount of time that other people have to watch videos, your video, when someone else made the same kind of video, is drastically cut down. There are also a whole bunch of, it's also easier to host videos. So there's a lot of other platforms out there that you can do this kind of stuff with. So it becomes something that really almost doesn't help you as much now as it used to be. It used to be a big thing. You could do some really great things with it. But it's becoming less and less profitable. And so organizations that share these kinds of things on YouTube that really make the business making videos or whatever it might be, are going to have to explore other options for videos. And there are plenty of avenues for videos. But I just wanted to kind of put that out there because I think that as content creators, if you're a content creator like myself, you may want to think about your options and not consider YouTube your only go-to. But if you're going to make videos, think about putting them out there on multiple platforms and just not expecting to make money with the video, but that video to point somebody somewhere else where you'll make the money somewhere else. Videos are used to be, this thing of value, and now videos are starting to be more and more the thing that points you to the value, the value themselves. There is a bill that has been introduced. And let me see if I can pull this story up. Maybe not be quick. This is an article from the Times Argus Online. I don't think I've ever been on the site in my entire life. Anyway. The bill would ban cell phone use for those under 21. This is in Montpellier. Where is that? This is really bad. I enjoy geography, but I'm not a buff. And I don't know. And I know I should know. Vermont. Right? Yes. Vermont. All right, a bill has been introduced in the Senate. The state Senate that would make it illegal for anyone in Vermont. I'm going to give you 21 to use or possess. It's like, wait, what? The bill SP12. Would make such possession or use? In the midst of it, it comes to a fungible weapon, a maximum of a year behind bars and a $1,000 fine. So I am 20 years old. Let's just say, what's up with it? I'm 20 years old. I've been 21 in 3 days. I had a job, I had a full-time job. I'm in construction. And I happen to be walking down the street, and I pull out my cell phone, and an officer sees me and arrests me for the use of a cell phone. I'm 20 years old, right? I'm walking down the street. My mom hands me a phone and says, hey, I can't figure out how to do this. Never happened, right? Never. And so I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. It's really something. You just click here, and then, obviously, right? What does he do? He comes over here. Oh, well, let me see your your license, your driver's license. I said, yeah, I have my driver's license right here. Because, you know, I'm an upstanding citizen. I've been driving since I was 16. And the officer says, oh, well, you do realize that it's illegal to use a cell phone. This is not even my phone. And he slaps a $1,000 fine on you and puts you in jail. That sounds reasonable, perfectly reasonable. Okay, so what is this about? The bill says that a cell phone use while driving is one of the leading killers of teenagers. It also said that young people use cell phones frequently to bully and threaten each other. Sometimes that has been linked to suicides. The bill reads like this. It says this. Here we go. The internet and social media, accessed primarily through cell phones. Well, it didn't used to be the case. I guess that is kind of anymore. Are used to radicalize and recruit terrorists, fascists, and other extremists. Cell phones have been often used by mass shooters of younger ages for research on previous shootings. So they are literally going to try to pull. This makes no sense for a whole lot of reasons, but it's actually interesting. The bill said that the legislature has concluded that those under 21 years old aren't mature enough to possess guns, smoke cigarettes, drink alcohol, and the same should apply to cell phone use. They are equating them. Here's the problem. I can comment now. I think I've got plenty to comment on for the rest of the show, which is only a whole few more minutes. The first thing is, they want to say that a cell phone, all of these bad things happen because the cell phone exists. That's like saying that the gun shot itself, right? This is the idea. The cell phone is the problem. The tool is the problem. The car is what caused the death, not the driver. And so if this were to be implemented, what does that mean then? Where's the line? Where do you go from there? Is there anything that's safe, anything that's dangerous, anything that causes anything bad? If you're going to say cigarettes are evil, so we need to take them, then what else are you going to take? You're going to take cell phones. Let's say that cell phones are, cell phones, anything bad happens on a cell phone, we got to take it. Anything happens bad with a kitchen knife, we got to take that too. You know what? Let's just put everyone in jail. It's safer. This way, no one will kill each other. This is the only way to do it. Where do you draw the line? Is this North Korea or is this America? I can't tell. If you're in Vermont, I really am not. And again, this deals with the same issue here. We're dealing with people really extreme. Now, what I find even more bizarre is that they want to take a cell phone. This is how the government tracks people. Well, I guess if you're in Vermont and you're the Vermont state government, you don't have the FBI to win. You don't really have the NSA, which can track everybody. They don't have all of these agencies. It's the federal government that would want to make that. They would not want these things taken away. We essentially have four-year-olds, three-year-olds that are given cell phones that are theirs, and this is where we're going. And Vermont basically says if you're 20 years old, you shouldn't have a cell phone. Never mind the good things that a cell phone can be used for. And what was fascinating to me is they say the internet and social media, accessed primarily to cell phones, are used to radicalize and recruit terrorists. Yeah, you know what else they do? They help lift people out of poverty because they give them information vital to their success as a human being. They help them lift them out of depression. Yeah, a cell phone can cause depression. A cell phone can also lift someone out of depression because they have access to other people. They have access to solutions. This is the situation that we find ourselves in. Technology is a great evil, and at the same time, it is of great benefit. It is a paradox in and of itself. Technology is something that is both wonderful and horrible all at the same time. It's not going anywhere, and it doesn't need to. It just needs to be handled with caution. If I pick up a gun, I've got to handle it with caution. If I pick up a cell phone, I need to do the same. This is where we are, and we have to understand that this is the paradigm that we live in. Step back for a moment and consider technology in context. Both a great wonder and a great evil. The inundation of technology into every part of our lives is itself a paradox. It raises people to things and it destroys the things. It helps people find answers to the most difficult of medical problems, and it introduces its own psychological disorder. Saves lives and causes deaths. In general, it's things about way of cost. But so often we lose sight of the bigger picture. I pursue a career in technology because it provides the largest window into the world. Today, in every industry, in every part of every organization, technology is integral both to individual and institutional success. That is the beginning of my statements on the bigger picture of technology. And I really wish I could finish that because that was epic. It's just these words. This is just amazing. Anyway, technology is something that we use on a daily basis. And if we lose sight of it, we lose sight of the bigger picture. And when I pick up this cell phone, I get consumed by it and I get sucked into it. It can be very detrimental. It can be very dangerous. It's not something that I want to do. And so this becomes the issue. What do we do with this technology? Do we throw it away? Do we take it and put it in the trash can? Do we say that we could have to ban it for those who are under 21 because it's dangerous? Do we ban it ourselves? But then the cost. What about the cost? We go back to the days when we didn't have cell phones and when our car broke down and we were on our way to meet somebody, we couldn't tell them and they would wonder where we were. Except that today, the assumption is that everyone has a cell phone. And so the social implications of an individual decision to ban it would be extremely detrimental to that individual's success. We are tied to these devices in more ways than we can even imagine. And it's not going away. But what are we going to do with it? I want to give you a peek. In the last couple of minutes here, into the future. There are, I believe, three, possibly four, phases of technology. We are already in the second. The first phase is that the computer is introduced and becomes mainstream. And everyone has a computer and they can use things in the computer. And this replaces file keeping and calculation and basic tasks like this. That was phase number one. Phase number two is upon us, and that is when this flat screen becomes the king. And on this flat screen, we can do anything. We can carry this flat screen with us, and it becomes tied into every part of society, and this flat screen is the way that we interact with our technology. There is a third phase that is coming up, and it's just around the corner, and that is augmented reality. There will be a day in the not-too-distant future where there will be an app that you will install in your glasses that will tell you the prices in the grocery store and how they compare to other stores. It will tell you how many steps you've taken. It will tell you where your car is at the mall when you park it outside. It will do all of these different things. It'll be different apps. It'll be set up exactly the way your phone is, except that it'll be your glasses. And everything will be projected into your space, into your world. You'll have the same world that you're living in reality. You'll have a virtual reality to go with it. This is the future. We need to prepare ourselves for it. We need to know what's coming. We need to be ready and know how to deal with it. Thank you for listening to the Pilgrim Show. I'm Nate Moss. I will see you next week.